"Not much of a chance of our getting any valentines this year," Billy Mack said, a frown puckering his forehead as he looked out of the tiny panes of the window of the cabin. A fire burned briskly in the sheet-iron stove inside. There was the odor of crisp loaves baking in the oven, and the kitchen sitting and dining room in one was comfortable, with some of the furnishings they had brought from home. But it was Labrador for all that. Mother, Father, Billy and Nancy Mack lived in a cabin on Schooner Bay. Father was the only doctor in the scattered neighborhood for miles around. Just across the bay was the hospital. Dr. Mack crossed on the ice two or three times a week to set broken legs and treat frozen hands and ears and cure more than one case of pneumonia. Cruel weather it was, such as only Labrador knows when the winter and the spring are contending with each other. There had been a mild spell when a splashing warm rain came down in a melting drizzle. The cliffs dripped as if they were promising spring flowers, and the road that led from the cabin to the edge of the bay was full of slush. Then there had been a shift in the weather, and everything was frozen stiff again overnight. But the whole white sweep of the ice, that was as heavy as a beamed flooring for the dog sleds, was shivering underneath the currents of the bay, and trying to break away, urged by the wind blowing briskly out to sea. "The post won't be here for a week yet in this weather," Billy's mother said, turning away from the oven of bread as the boy spoke. "Perhaps when it does come, it will bring you a valentine or two from the city." "Well, we've our valentines of last year, and the year before, and the year before that," Nancy said, opening a box that she had brought into the room. "We can play that they just came, Billy, and that St. Valentine found us after all, even way up here in Labrador." "So we can," Billy cried. And the brother and sister poured out the bright contents of the box on the table. Filmy lace paper, and gilt and silver doves, bright scarlet hearts, and daintily inscribed messages of friendship, all reminded the children of the days when the postman had brought these letters of love to the door by hand, not by sleds over fields of ice. "Oh, but they're pretty, aren't they?" Nancy exclaimed. "Here's the valentine that Grandmother sent," Billy said, opening a folded piece of paper at the top of which two doves were beautifully drawn in pen and ink. "She made it all herself," he said, and he read the writing aloud. "This is the day, February 14th, when we try to be kind to everyone. We wish to give not only loving thoughts and words, but deeds to our friends, because it is a day set for kind feeling." "Dear Grandmother," Nancy said softly. Then she added, "Granny Thomas is over at the hospital at the Cove. Father said she was laid up with rheumatism. And Skipper Brisk's little lad Peter is in the hospital, too, getting his lame leg straightened out." For a minute, the two children were quiet, fingering their precious store of valentines. When Nancy spoke, she said exactly what was in Billy's mind. "I think Granny Thomas and Peter would each like to have a valentine," as if he had already planned a way to cross to the hospital, whose white roof could just be seen across Schooner Bay at the Cove, Billy added, "The dog team's fine and fresh, for the dogs didn't go out yesterday, and Father won't need them until tomorrow." "Yes, we'll go," Nancy decided. When they told their mother of their plan, she was a little worried. "The wind is from the south," she said, "and you know what that means. There'll be a breakup soon." "The ice will hold together in the bay for many a day yet," their father said. "You mustn't set too much store in these early frosts. Billy's as good a driver as I am, and he and Nancy will easily be able to get over to the Cove with their valentines and back. I would go too, but there's too much sickness on this side of the bay for me to be able to leave today." The dogs, little wolf-like creatures, were glad to be off. They pulled the long, low sled in individual traces, and it took only a little while to harness them. In the warm comfort of the fur rugs that lined the sled, Nancy was cuddled with the box of valentines in her lap. Billy ran along beside the dogs, urging and guiding them. He was bundled in furs, too, and both children were as warm as toast. They soon left the trail of the road, and the dogs, with long, loping strides, struck out onto the wide, white ice sheet of Schooner Bay. "I guess Skipper Brisk's little lad Peter ought to have two or three valentines. We've plenty to go around," Nancy said from the depths of her rugs. Oh, Billy, isn't it wonderful out here? So far away from everything and so still, she exclaimed after a while. I wish it wasn't so still, Billy said, as he seated himself on the sled beside her. The dogs knew the way now and were trudging steadily along, with little need of driving. The sun's gone under and the wind feels wet, like snow, he said, a little fearfully. The boy was right in his prophecy. The weather changed as quickly as it often does in that strange northerly place. A storm was on them. The gray sky, so shortly before a vivid blue, thickened to drab and then to black. A sudden puff of southerly wind brought the wet snow, and then the rain. Although it was barely dusk, because of the almost limitless spaces of the bay, they lost sight of the track across the cove. No man could have found his way. Only dogs could find the track through such a gale. Billy folded the robes more closely around Nancy. Don't be afraid, he urged, trying in comforting her to still his own fright. The team's been across 100 times this winter, and the dogs know every inch of the way. I'm trying to be brave, Nancy replied, her voice scarcely carrying above the wind. And the box of Valentine's is all right. I have it well wrapped up here in the robes. After their first terror at the darkness that had settled down so suddenly, the children began to enjoy their race with the storm. The dogs, trotting briskly along, were warm. The children themselves, so warmly wrapped up, were flushed and comfortable. After an hour's driving, the rain slackened, although the wind still hurried along with them from the south. Then the sky cleared, and with it came the sight of the long, straight road across the ice to the cove that the dogs had not left for a minute. "There's the hospital! Why, we're almost there!" Nancy shouted. Whatever Billy would have said in reply was stopped by a sudden noise. A shrill crack it was at first. Then it deepened to a boom, like that of a faraway thunder, coming nearer, though, and broken by a series of sharp cracks that surrounded the sled and the dog team. The ice felt, beneath the children, as if it were a giant piece of paper crumpling to pieces. It was breaking up in Schooner Bay sooner than anybody had expected, because of the early warm spell and the rain. The wind whimpered and pushed, and helped to split it as it broke. When a sudden ray of sunshine broke through the sky, the children could see plainly what a plight they were in. When the ice goes out, it breaks into great pans that float along over the top of the water, like shining white rafts. Billy and Nancy, and the sled and the dogs, were in the middle of a good-sized pan now. All around them was swirling water, foaming white at being so suddenly released. Nancy sobbed a little, but she soon stopped, for an idea had put courage into her heart. "Maybe Mother'll see the breakup from the shore and fetch Father to send for us in Skipper Brisk's skiff," she said. "They'll have to hurry, though," Billy said. He wet his finger and held it up to feel the wind. Then his face went white as he saw the friendly curve of the cove shore receding from sight. "We're going away from the cove," he said. "We're going out to sea." The dogs huddled together and snarled viciously, their wolf instincts roused by the danger. Billy tried to distract their attention by feeding them some meat he had brought with him. It kept them quiet and prevented them overturning the sled into the water. Then he tried to think. Whatever was done, he must do. It was his work to save his sister's life, if he could. The pan of ice upon which they were marooned was almost the only one that was floating out to sea. The others, some of which were quite as large, were going toward the shore. If only one of these pans would come near enough, he thought, they could step across to it, that is, if it touched their pan. Then another adventuresome thought came to him. Why not try to pull up alongside a pan that was floating in the opposite direction? The cold, weighted as it was with the dampness from the water, was bitter now. To work, Billy had to take off his fur mittens, and he pulled Nancy from her rugs and told her what she too must do with her bare hands to help him. Their fingers stiffened, but they would not feel their ache as they unharnessed the dogs, who, let loose, bounded and pawed about them, getting in the way and making their task twice as hard. The long, thin tendons of skin that had made the dog's traces, they cut with Billy's knife. Then they spliced them to make a coil with a lasso loop in the end. "Put your arms as tight as you can around my waist, Nancy," Billy said, as he held the coiled lasso tightly over his shoulder and planted his feet firmly on the ice. "I must wait until I see a pan that's floating into the shore, and it must have a jagged piece to throw this lasso around. When I throw, hold me fast, or I'll slip into the water." It seemed hours instead of seconds that they waited. The quickly tacking wind and the currents of the bay made the pans float in every direction. Now several would almost touch. Then they would be so widely separated as to leave a great sweep of open water. Billy watched for his chance. Soon it came. A big round pan with a ragged spar of ice sticking up at one end where it had splintered. It was within throwing distance. Billy twisted the lasso over his head. "Hold fast, Nancy," he begged between his clenched teeth. Then he threw. As straight as he had aimed, the lasso cut through the air, catching and tightening around the ice spar that looked like a rudder on the end of the pan. His feet slipped as he pulled, but Nancy held him pluckily, and they both braced themselves, heels dug into the ice, for the long, hard pull. The lasso cut the boys' hands. At first, the force of the weight of their pan pulled the other out of its shoreward course. It seemed as if both pans would drift out to sea. But slowly, the strong pulling of the skin tendon drew the other alongside. The dogs leaped over. Billy followed and reached his hand out to help Nancy, who had gone back for the treasure box of Valentine's, and was just in time to cross before the two pans drifted apart. In the center of the new pan, their sled gone, Billy and Nancy clung to each other, and the dogs whined at their feet. The pan had changed its course a little with the pulling. Would it resume its old course, they wondered? Slowly, though, it turned. Now it was drifting toward the cove, and the water was quite free of ice and settling down into a quiet blue calm. They were away from the treacherous ice field now. Suddenly, like the wings of a messenger dove in the distance, floating between the cove and them, Billy and Nancy saw the sails of Skipper Brisk's skiff bearing down to rescue them. There was never such a St. Valentine's Day at the Cove Hospital. There was the patient's loved doctor, who had come so unexpectedly in the skiff, and Billy and Nancy were there with so many valentines that everyone had three or four apiece. Skipper Brisk's little lad Peter sat up in bed and shared his supper with his daddy, who came so unexpectedly, when no one supposed the skiff would be able to sail for 6 weeks or so. Granny Thomas sat up in bed, too, and as she smiled down on her lap full of red hearts, she said, "Not even the breakup stopped them. St. Valentine crossed Schooner Bay."